Going Linux, episode 464, 2024 year-end review.
Get your tech on, it's time to roll. Plug your cords in and take control. Say goodbye to the old routine. Linux is here, it's the future machine. No virus.
Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Bill. Whether you're new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux.
We hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and open source applications and using them to get things done.
If you want, you can send us feedback at our email address at goinglinux@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-904-468-7889.
In today's episode, 2024 year-end review. Hi, Bill. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. It is a new year, and was a busy one, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, but it was so busy. It went by so fast, it's ridiculous. We were saying before we started recording that this past 4 years has gone by very, very quickly. So, and at the same time, it seemed at times that it was dragging so slowly. It's kind of weird the way things work, right?
Yes, I have to agree. It's like it took forever to get to the holiday season, and holiday season just went blew right through it, and it's like back to the long stretch of no holidays, you know, for a while.
Yeah, holiday season went by quickly, but Black Friday, which is supposed to be one day, we went through a Black Friday. It stretched out to be a month last year. Well, it's gone into like 3 months now. So the Black Friday 3 months went by very, very slowly. And I saw a commercial on television, I think it was yesterday or the day before, and here we're recording this on January 5th. And they still had an ad for a Black Friday sale that somebody was still running.
I've seen it was the day before Thanksgiving they had the store had a sales. It was like the pre Black Friday, and then it was the Black Friday, and then it was the, you know, it went through the whole weekend, and then it was Cyber Monday. I'm like, well, why would we just say this week is just sales, you know?
Yes.
This is added the other day. But anyway, yeah, it's the new year rung in when I was asleep. I went to bed. I'm getting old. I'm going to bed. The new year's going to come in whether I'm awake or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, did you stay up or did you go to bed?
Yeah, no, stayed up. Watched the ball drop on TV and watched whatever they were doing here in Los Angeles. And didn't stay up too much after that. I was expecting maybe some fireworks here in the neighborhood, and they didn't do it this year, probably because the cops got after them last year for doing it. They're illegal here, but yeah. So, yeah, time was had by most people.
We in New Mexico, we made up for it. My neighbors were shooting guns up into the sky, so hey.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah,
I can see the fireworks. The guns, not so much.
It's the country, and it is definitely New Mexico Wild West. So, yes, people were shooting. I'm sure there was a lot of fireworks, but people were shooting guns up. I mean, so hopefully no one got hit on the way back down. So, anyway.
That's it. I was just thinking about that. You know, the bullets go up, but they got to come down somewhere, and hope you're not standing right there when they do.
I'm staying inside. But we had a few people having a good time out there. Of course, the sheriff's department frowns upon that and usually puts a stop to it really, really quick.
Yep. I can see that. So what's new for New Year for you, sir?
So I installed MX Linux, and I'm going to run it for a year. No distro hopping for me in 2025.
Ooh, that's a real commitment. because, yeah, you can have it installed, but you've got multiple computers, so you could distro hop on the multiple computers.
No, I can't.
No problem. No, you can't? Okay, no. Tell me about that.
So I have one that I use as a test machine that's actually turned off right mm-hmm. now. I only use it to test the distro. It's an old machine. Then I have the one that's still running NixOS. It's been running NixOS for over a year now.
Yeah. I remember when you installed that.
Yeah, and it's actually a year and 3 days now that I have not done anything today except run it and upgrade it. So it's run really well. But I'm very pleased with it, but it's, of course, it's a little different. So I'm still playing and experimenting with that. But my main system, now I did know that I have one game that I have to have that awful W operating system for. I play with my friends, so it's an online game. So I have that on a small SSD that I in my computer, that's all it has is that one game.
Okay.
And
so you're not wasting too much hard drive space if you've put it on a small SSD. Okay.
Yeah, it's only a 500. Then I got the 1 terabyte spinning RUS, which everything else, all the Linux is on. So when I'm not playing a game, I'm running Linux. And I figured that I'm not going to change it. This is what I'm going to run for daily driver and see if I can do it. And so far, it's been good. This was installed on January 2nd, so I need to run to January 2nd, 2026. So we'll see if I make it. And I'm running the KDE version of the MX Linux. So not the XFCE.
Right.
Okay. So not a fan, too much a fan there.
How do you like it so far?
I like it. Still getting things set up, but for the most part, it's already set up. It's running great. No, so there's when I first start up, some of like the flat packs take a little extra time to start up the first time. Then they're instantaneous after that. So I think it's just because it's a spinning rust, and also it's loading. It takes a little bit of a little extra few seconds with first time starting up.
Okay.
That said, I did look at several different. I looked at Arch. I looked at Manjaro. I looked at regular just stock Ubuntu and Ubuntu Cinnamon. Looked at Linux Mint, and MX Linux seemed just to be the one that fit my needs. And also, I'm having issues with Ubuntu based distributions, their flavors. The startup on those darn snaps are ridiculous. I have a lot of issues with snaps. They're slow. Compared to a flat pack. I'm sure it's a great idea and everything like that, but they're garbage on my system, and I don't know why. Even on an SSD.
Wow. I know that the snaps are reported to be slow when you first start them from a fresh reboot. And I know about that. I've experienced that, but I haven't taken the time actually to even test to see if the flat packs are faster than the snaps in regular use, you know, after you've booted everything up and used things for the first time. I haven't noticed any performance issue, but then again, I haven't run them side by side to actually test it. But you're finding that the snaps are slower.
I am. Some of the applications I use seem to also not be as current as some of the Flatpak versions.
Oh, yeah, that I've noticed, yeah.
Okay. So I don't care what the back end looks like, you know, as long as it works. It's infuriating when it's supposed to keep these things updated, and it's not. It's a couple versions behind. And mm-hmm. I said, now I'm not harshing on snaps. They're just not my favorite. I mean, if they work for you, great. And I know Canonical wants to have an atomic or immutable operating system that runs, and everything's run in snaps. They're going to have to do a lot of work. They're going to have to get that speed up, in my opinion. Please tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm just not impressed with their performance.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't really noticed that except on the initial start after a new reboot. But I think the lag behind version-wise is partially, if you're using an LTS, long-time support version of an Ubuntu distribution, or a distribution that's based on an LTS, Canonical is keeping the older versions to go along with that LTS to ensure that it's absolutely stable. Older version of the apps, that is. So you kind of have to expect that. If you want to get the latest version of an application rather than using Ubuntu's snaps or even the deb packages that are available in the Ubuntu repository, you can either go to the next version, the interim release, after the LTS, and just keep up with the interim releases. And that'll give you more recent snaps and more recent deb packages. Or you can just enable Flatpaks and update your Flatpaks as you go along. And that'll make sure that you have the more recent ones. So if you're on an LTS of an Ubuntu release, it's not that they're not updating the snaps and they're not making use of the updated deb packages, but it's just they want to maintain the stability of the LTS, and they don't add too many updates to packages that might break things on an LTS.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you on this one.
And you can do that? You can disagree with me?
Please don't fire me. The whole idea behind the Flatpak snap and snaps is that they don't touch the base system. Everything is contained in the package or container. So it doesn't matter if you're running the older LTS. The idea of running a snap will say, we can keep that application current.
Yes. I agree with you with that. Yeah.
Okay. So the whole idea is, you install it and there's an issue because it's Flatpak. You can roll it back to the previous version. It isn't like, it's not that difficult. And so they're able to supply everything it needs, the current one in the, container that the program's in. So it does not touch the operating system, or supposed to not touch. Now, the only thing is there is some security settings that the AppArmor, I think Canonical does a lot of work with the snaps that others don't want to do. So this is not bash on snaps, but if you're using a Flatpak or snap, you should be able to have the current version of an application. Example, the MX Linux is running on Debian Bookworm. I have the current version of Audacity. Okay. I have the newest, version of Firefox. I have the newest version of Discord. So, Debian doesn't change near as fast as Ubuntu, but I still have updated apps. So you kind of see where I'm coming with that?
I do, and I agree with you that with snaps and Flatpaks and app images, you should be able to run the most recent version of an application at any time on any distribution. That's the whole purpose of them. I think the point I was making about the snaps not being as recent in the snap store is I know that Ubuntu curates the snap store, or at least manages the snap store, and they curate what deb packages go into the repository that they have. And those deb packages can lag behind. But I think if the Ubuntu team are maintaining the snaps in the Snap Store, they're not spending a lot of time keeping them up to the latest and greatest. And so I think that the snaps lag behind if they're maintained by Canonical or the Ubuntu team. Now, those that are not managed by them, that are more managed by the creator of the apps who create their own snaps,
yeah,
and put them into the Snap Store, those are more recent. So I was thinking about those that are maintained by Canonical or Ubuntu.
That's a good point.
Yeah, like the Firefox app, and some of the apps that are specific to Ubuntu, like the Welcome app that I noticed is not in the most recent version of Ubuntu, but some of the other things that they have that they're maintaining specifically for Ubuntu, those tend to be a little bit behind in the Snap Store.
Okay, well.
So I don't think we disagree that much.
No, okay, we didn't disagree. The one thing that I've heard that snaps will do have an advantage, and I don't know this because I'm not a programmer, or I don't build Flatpaks or snaps, but apparently the whole idea behind snaps is that the Canonical will be able to use them to change out, everything will be interchangeable. So,
yeah,
using snaps. So I'm just thinking they're going to have to do some work on some speed or some integration, whatever they have to do. But I don't know right now how well that's going to work. So hopefully they'll get it figured out.
Yeah, I can see that. Yep.
Okay. So, Larry, it's 2025, and I thought it would be fun to go over some of the news that happened in open source and Linux in 2024. What do you think?
I think so. Didn't we do an episode of like this fairly recently? Is there really that much news?
Last year. So, yes, it's been actually, this year has been busy. I had to really cut it down. We could go on for a while, but so the first one I'm sure everybody's heard about is that some of the Linux driver maintainers had been delisted from their maintainer positions with the mainline Linux kernel over their connections to Russia. It was in the news, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of people were like, why did that happen? It's open source. And first, these maintainers didn't, as far as we know, do anything wrong. But when you have a project as big as the Linux kernel and that's powers so much of the internet and our phones and our routers and our computers and, you know, watches and everything else. There's some sanctions going on and we have to follow the letter of the law. So they had to delist the maintainers. Now, as a maintainer, they could just submit their patches, okay, without having a lot of review. They can still submit the patches, but they have to be reviewed now. If they want to contribute. I don't think it wasn't a political it was political, but it wasn't by the project. They were doing what they were told by the government. So, you know, if you're a nonprofit and you're maintaining something that they deem as important, they actually can say, you can't have these people, you can't use this equipment. You know, it's just government. And that's the way I understood it. because people were thinking that it was, they're siding with Russia, or they're siding with Ukraine, or they're, you know, no, it's just, they had to do what they had to do because the government said, hey, wake up, guys, you got to do what we tell you on this fact because of sanctions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that story passed me by. I didn't even pay any attention to it if I heard it at all. So I really don't have any comment on it because it didn't, well, it affected me because, you know, I run Linux, but yeah, it didn't really affect me from a day-to-day using Linux perspective. I didn't notice that anything changed. Everything seems to be running just fine. And if it's something you have to do, they have to do it.
Yeah, so they apparently work for companies that are being sanctioned. And, you know, it's nothing against them. It's just, you know, it's a government geopolitical politics. So I do want to, again, say these maintainers who worked very hard on the Linux kernel did nothing wrong. But because of who they work for, where they live, they had to be delisted temporarily. Hopefully this will all get sorted out. You know how things go. So that was a big story. So a more upbeat story, Larry, is?
Yeah, so there's a new file system that's been accepted into the Linux kernel, and it is bcachefs. It is bcachefs. And I've heard it, you know, on other Linux podcasts discussed, but in my first attempt to pronounce this, I said BCA chefs. No, it's bcachefs.
I did it too, so it's fine.
Yeah, bcachefs. It's a new advanced file system for Linux with an emphasis on reliability and robustness. And on their website, which we'll have a link in the show notes, of course, the first line of what appears says the cow file system for Linux that won't eat your data. Cow, for those new to Linux and file systems, cow is copy on write.
Yeah.
So that's what that is. So there's no bovine intervention here at all. So copy on write, and some examples of copy on write file systems are ZFS and Butter file system, and yeah, so this is a new one that's been accepted to the Linux kernel. It's been around a while, but it's now part of the Linux kernel.
Yeah, so it's still experimental. There's been a little drama between Linus Torvalds and the maintainer or the developer of bcachefs. They went back and forth. They had a few misunderstandings, but I think they got it worked through. I'm really excited about this file system. It's supposed to be very, very fast, and it's supposed to be very, very safe and robust. So it's still early days, but we don't want it to eat our data. So I'm looking forward to another choice. You know, other, you know, ones are like ZFS and BTRF or Butter FS, and they both have their strengths and their drawbacks, but you know, both of them have been around for a while. You know, some of them have had little rough spots, but they're working out. They seem to get better with every revision. So hopefully we'll have a third choice soon. I'd love to be one of the first people to try one of this thing. So I really hope that it makes some progress and it's easy to get going. I really do want to try it.
Yeah. And by third choice, you're talking about third choice native Linux file systems. I mean, you can install Linux on a FAT32 file system if you wanted to.
So
we get the point. I just, for new listeners or people new to Linux, third native file system choice.
Yeah, so hopefully a native file system, you're right. So I thank you for making that clear. I didn't really make that too clear. But yes, I'd like to be able to choose Butter or ZFS or Bcash FS, you know, as just native. Which one do you want to use? You know, choice is my favorite thing.
So, yeah, I always use EXT4. It's a good standard solid one, native. Yeah.
But that's what I'm running right now. That was the default on MX Linux. But I've run Butter FS, and I've even tried ZFS. And, you know, really, EXT4 seems to work just fine, and it works with everything. So I'm just a little bit of a I like to see new shiny toys to look at. So, okay. So, I have good news for Team Green. NVIDIA, official Linux graphics driver, enjoyed a much more robust Wayland support.
Aha, I see what you did there with the Team Green. And the NVIDIA. Yeah, okay, got it.
Because NVIDIA's green. Come on.
Yep.
That was my one time to be clever and you know, okay.
That's cool.
So, their open source kernel modules have matured greatly and are now being used by default, and their proprietary Vulkan and OpenGL drivers remain in good standing for performant Linux gaming. Notice I put Linux gaming, but and workstation graphics, but gaming's the most important one. Okay. So they've open sourced some of their kernel modules. Apparently they're working really well. And so, you know, they haven't, they still have some proprietary stuff in their drivers, but they've made steps to open source some of the kernel modules and to really help, with the performance. So I'm very pleased with that because I run an NVIDIA and it would be nice. It would be nice if it was like the AMD where it's just built into the kernel and I didn't have to do anything, but not there yet. Maybe one day.
Someday. Yeah. Good. So looking forward to that.
You're like, I don't care. I run Intel.
Yeah, exactly. But hey, who knows? Sometime in the future, I may get a computer with an NVIDIA chip in it, especially with the way Intel is going.
But apparently the Intel Arc cards, the graphics cards are getting really great reviews.
Okay.
So just something to think about. The B580 is nice.
Okay, cool.
You're like, whatever.
I don't know whether I don't know whether I've got an ARC card in here or not. The system's reporting Intel Raptor Lake P Iris Xe graphics. I don't know what that means in terms of ARC or not ARC, but that's what I got in my machine right now that I'm using. And, you know, I wouldn't know the difference between super high performing graphics and whatever I've got because I don't stress the graphics by any stretch. So anyway, yeah, good news for Team Green.
Yeah.
Happy to hear it. All right. Now, something I do know a little bit about, System 76 has made great progress on their Cosmic Desktop in 2024. They've been working on this for the year, and yeah, they've made a lot of progress. They're already on Alpha 4 of the desktop, and they plan to have a beta out in the first part of 2025, anytime now. And I'm sure sometime in 2025, we'll get the production release and be able to say, yes, of course, I'm using System 76 and Cosmic Desktop, or I'm using something else and the Cosmic Desktop. So, yeah, I've given it a try. And again, I don't stress graphics or desktops much. You have to like the way System 76 sets things up. And if you do, the Cosmic Desktop may be for you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think what's really cool is it's all written in Rust, which is supposed to be a memory safe programming language that means less issues with memory leakages and crashes and stuff. So I tried it. Of course, I did when it was like Alpha 2, and there was a lot of stuff missing. I didn't have any issues. Of course, there wasn't much I wanted to do with it because everything was still kind of like, we just do this thing together, so it might have some bugs. It had a few bugs, but nothing that would make it not work. So, I'm really excited to see how far that comes, and we'll keep an eye on it. It's exciting. There's a lot. I think even Fedora's talking about having a spin of it.
That'd be good.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll shake up the other desktops and have them start innovating. So, Larry, here's one that I want your kind of input on. Is the Mozilla Foundation. What is going on with them in 2024? You know, the Mozilla Foundation, the nonprofit arm of the Linux Firefox browser maker Mozilla, has laid off 30% of its employees and dropped its advocacy division. And they seem to be just throwing stuff at the wall to see what sticks. What's going on? Do you know?
Yeah, this is not a good sign for Mozilla. And given that they're nonprofit, and most of my experience has been with for-profit companies, I don't know as much about how you run a nonprofit as I do about how you run a for-profit organization. So I may not be the most qualified to comment on this, but what I can say is this doesn't look good. Doesn't look good at all. And I agree with your question at the beginning. What the heck is going on with these guys?
Yeah, I think they might be worried about, there's been talk about they might not get the same kind of funding from, can't get a lot of funding from Google. I don't know what they're trying to do or if they're trying to streamline stuff, but you figured that dropping the advocacy division doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that seems kind of weird. I mean, I can understand if your main funding source is drying up, you can't have as many employees and still stick around as an organization. But advocacy, I would think that that's a key part of the Mozilla Foundation, or it has been for sure. Not anymore.
Yeah. I know there's people talking that they just need to concentrate on the browser, and I agree, because we don't have a lot of choice as far as types of browsers. I mean, there's a lot of choice, but they're mostly based on the Chrome, and Firefox is one of the last that isn't. I think there's Safari is on WebKit or something like that, but that's not run on, a lot of computers, unless it's an Apple computer or an iPhone. Yeah. So we really do need to have a little bit more diversity because, we don't want everything just being a monoculture. So.
Right, exactly. I mean, even Microsoft Edge is based on Chrome, right?
Yeah, it is. And I'm having a hard time. I mean, they could not have burned through, or they could have burned through, the amount of money they've been getting from Google. So, it's like, what have you guys been doing with this money? I mean, I realize they have some pretty high paid executives and, good for them, but, let's not lose the track of what your foundation is for. And it's like they're saying one thing and doing another. So I don't know. I'm not on the board. I can be. Larry would be more than happy to be CEO of the Mozilla Foundation. He goes.
I don't think so. Like I said, I don't know anything about running a nonprofit. Well, apparently I would not be a good choice.
Well, you might be better than what they got now. You never know.
You never know.
Anyway.
But yeah, we got to maintain some choice here. And if something disastrous, and I'm not wishing this on them, but if something disastrous happens to the Mozilla Foundation, maybe somebody could fork the Firefox browser and make it better. Well, there are some forks of Firefox out there. Maybe we should take a look at some of those as an alternative.
Yeah, one's called LibreWolf, which is very good. I've used it before.
Yeah, and I think there's an IceWeasel or something. I don't know whether it's even maintained anymore.
IceWeasel, yeah.
There are a few, yeah.
I remember that.
Okay, moving on then. Next news story is the Raspberry Pi Foundation has been busy. They've released a Raspberry Pi 500 and a monitor, just to name a few of the cool things this year.
They have been releasing some pretty cool accessories. They've new compute modules, a new Raspberry Pi 500. I think it has like 8 gigabytes of RAM, which is insane. They released a monitor, a Raspberry branded monitor that seems to be pretty well. So they just seem to be going from strength to strength, and I'm really really excited. Now, if they could just get a Raspberry Pi with, you know, that was like 16 gigabytes or something, that would be pretty awesome too. But no, seriously, they have been doing really, really good. They've been staying, they've been having their eye on the ball, as I like to say. I don't have one. I wish I did, but I don't have one.
So this Raspberry Pi monitor, I've been kind of looking for a portable second monitor to carry around with my laptop. And you don't have to have a Raspberry Pi to use this monitor, I wouldn't expect, right?
No.
It's specifically designed for use with the Raspberry Pi and the Raspberry Pi 500. But I see that in December they had it on sale for $100?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Oh, wow. I'm going to have to look at the specs on this thing and see what it has. I'm sure the sale is over, but sounds like a good accessory to have, whether you have a Raspberry Pi or not.
Possible new tech toy?
Yes, possible new tech toy for sure.
All right.
Yeah, especially if it runs off of USB power and all that other good stuff that makes it portable. That would be good. So I'll take a look at that and see where it goes.
Okay. So, Larry, yes? The Wayland Display Manager has made huge inroads to replace the Xord Display Manager. Fedora and Ubuntu now use Wayland. There are some fallbacks, for Ubuntu, but I think I did read that in Fedora 41, the Wayland is the default, and it's usually a default in the standard Ubuntu. And the reason that this is important is that they've been saying the old X driver, it's getting a little bit long in the tooth. It's been around for like 20, 30 years, and it's been patched and repatched and, you know, voodoo set over it. And it just, it has some security issues or possible security issues. And it's time to move to the current decade, I guess. And so Wayland's come a long way. And, just as the earlier story, you know, now, the card manufacturers are now working on drivers to make them even work better for Wayland. So I think that Xorg's not going to disappear immediately because. I mean, Debian's running X. That's what it's running on my machine right now. But once it becomes, you know, I think a little more stable and more being used in more driver support, I think the X is going to kind of be phased out. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. It'll be eventually phased out. Who knows how long that'll take? I have been waiting for Wayland for, you know, what, 10 years now or what?
Oh, wow.
seems like 10 years, yeah. And I'm encouraged to see one big milestone that will help accelerate its development, I think, and kind of round out some of those rough edges. And that is the fact that, as you suggested, as you stated, the Fedora distribution and Ubuntu distribution are beginning to use Wayland by default. And when that happens, now we're going to find some of the bugs that come about as people begin to use it more and more. Now, for those people on an Ubuntu release that's on an LTS, it's not changing in that. And I think the current interim release of Ubuntu still isn't using Wayland, but the next one, whatever that is, will, it sounds like it will use Wayland as its display manager, and Fedora will as well. And hopefully it doesn't break anything. I know that some of the scripts that I use are using the features of X to make them work. I've got some automatic display switcheroo things that I use. And some of those commands, as I understand it, will still be usable under Wayland. So I'm hoping that nothing there breaks, but I'm expecting to have to make some tweaks to some of those scripts. But for the most part, I think this is a good thing that the display manager will be more modernized, and maybe we'll get some new features. Hopefully we won't lose any significant important features, which is always a risk when you change to a new architecture. But Wayland is the future. And I think you said come to the new decade. Well, I think it's even come to the new century.
Yeah.
So it'll be good. I'm kind of interested to see what happens. And if the next LTS version of Ubuntu has Wayland in it, I'll be using it.
The performance is getting better. They're working on some of the missing features. So just a little side note, some of the developers at Valve have really stepped up and try and have been kind of pushing Wayland forward, because I think they see that's where it's going. So they wanted to definitely get that moving forward. So I've seen a lot of progress this year, more so than I've past couple of years. So hopefully when we go over this next, at the end of this year, there, you know, Wayland will be even in a better state.
Yep, absolutely. And Wayland is not the only thing that's new and coming as very cool changes. Ubuntu has some cool changes and improvements to usability and other updates in 2024 that will extend into 2025 and usability this year. So we have a link to an article that outlines some of these changes that we've actually received in 2024. And maybe we can kind of go down that list in that article. What do you think?
Yeah. You want me to take the first one?
Sure.
Okay. So Ubuntu is starting to embrace RISC the processors. So RISC is a open source processor architecture that has been around a while, and I think it's RISC 5 is what. So right now, Canonical is kind of like the de facto distro if you want to play with the RISC 5. And so basically, RISC 5 is a free and open source processor spec. Think the blueprint that anyone can use and improve, or to create their own computing chips without the need to pay licensing fees or royalties. As you've probably heard about, you know, like ARM, which, you know, it's like, well, that one of their license is Qualcomm, and they make the Snapdragon, so that's an ARM processor. They have to pay a license fee for to use that their blueprint. So RISC-V is not, you don't have to pay anything. You can make it changes to it and create your own chips, and you're good to go.
Yeah, kind of looking forward to see how that progresses. I'm very encouraged that now that we're able to use new technology, it will definitely help with keeping up with the hardware is kind of the way to look at this. I'm looking forward to not just the RISC architecture, but also as things advance for Linux to be run on ARM chips, being able to run Linux on some lighter weight processors will be very important to moving ahead, because that's the way that lightweight laptops are going. And that's kind of what I use, is lightweight laptops. So, yeah, looking forward to that. Okay, the next point they make is provisioning faster installs. And this is specific to Ubuntu. And what this is really about is Ubuntu has a goal to make Ubuntu and its derivatives install faster. And in 2024, with the April release, the 24.04 LTS release, they introduced a Flutter-based installer that promised and delivered faster installs. And you'll hear and read the word provisioning as you read this article. And essentially what that is it's just a term that's used for administrators and developers to give the system that's being installed a configuration file that lists the options and preferences and drives and some of the default things that you need to install an operating system. So they're working on that to make that better, and that will make things run faster. And they've made some advances there in 2024, and they'll continue to develop new things that will help users of Ubuntu and Ubuntu derivatives to be able to install the operating system faster and faster and faster, so that it takes less and less time to get things up and running. It's already
pretty fast.
Really, really fast, no matter what distribution you're using. But the Ubuntu folks, they're putting some effort into it for sure.
Yeah, and that kind of makes sense, especially if you're going to be deploying it to an organization that has 10,000 laptops. You want it to install as quick as possible. So, So the next one is the HEIC or HEIF. It's image support, and the Ubuntu 24.04 now has support for viewing and opening these types of files. Not the most dramatic change, and probably not the one that's going to be the super notice, but all important, it's the same, because HEIF is high efficiency image format, and so a lot of cell phones use those that format, and I know the iPhone does. So it's nice that you can now have support in to actually look and open these high efficiency image files. So that's awesome. And it's just a quality of life thing, you know, because I think Samsung devices also uses that. And so anyway, more support for different file formats and image formats and audio formats is always a good thing. Not the most exciting, but hey, it's always good.
Yeah, I use an iPhone, and the HEIF format is the standard out-of-the-box format that your pictures end up in. And for a while, they were incompatible with Linux. And it's good to see that now a lot of the applications are recognizing that file format, and you can open the files and preview the files in that format. One thing I've noticed is they are huge by comparison, and they eat up a lot of the space that you have available for storage. So I usually convert them to JPEGs or to PNG files as soon as I get them, and I have them stored that way by default. The only time I use the HEIF format for a picture is if I know I'm taking a wide shot and I'm taking it in order to zoom in on certain areas and clip out a segment of the photo to make another photo and use that particular section of it. Not that I do that too often, but every once in a while I'll take a wide shot intentionally so that I can go out and clip out a few portions of it to use as snapshots, if you will, things without having to take like three or four photos. You just take one wide shot in high resolution and then just jump into it. And since I'm converting them to PNGs anyway, for the most part, the smaller clipped out segment is usually just fine in a PNG. So that's what I do. But for the most part, it's way too big for me. It's like shooting raw video or something.
About the size of a raw file, if you think about it.
Yeah, and I don't have that much file storage space on my phone or even on the cloud. So, I'll take the smaller ones.
Yeah, small, please.
But it's good. Support is good.
Yes.
Support is good. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so our next one is the Linux kernel cadence changed. What that really means is the pace at which they develop and release new versions to the kernel changed earlier in 2024. So new versions of Ubuntu, for example, now ship with most recent kernel releases in development at the time of the release, even if that kernel is not yet stable. So this change to the kernel pace of release will affect which kernel you get with your Ubuntu release.
Yeah.
Now, what Ubuntu says about it is Ubuntu will now ship the absolute latest available version of the upstream Linux kernel at the specified Ubuntu release freeze date, even if the upstream is still in release candidate status. What that means is when they first release Ubuntu, or they freeze it ready for release later in the year, they're going to use the most recent Linux kernel, even if it's not a production release at that point. And what that will do is ensure that your LTS kernel version is a little more up to date when you actually begin using it. Than it has been in the past because of the mismatch between the Ubuntu release schedule and the Linux kernel release schedule. So you'll get a more recent version, it'll be a stable version, and it'll just make Ubuntu better.
Yeah. One of the reasons that they did this is that someone pointed out that when they used to freeze the kernel before they went to the next version, they lost a lot of new additions of like drivers and hardware support. So by waiting to the absolute last moment that's theoretically possible, they're able to make sure that you have a nice fresh kernel with all the current hardware drivers and support in, instead of having to go back and, you know, not have it supported or patch it or whatever. So I think it's more of to save them some work.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is important if you're relying on Ubuntu support for their LTS and you want to make sure that the kernel that's in the distribution is supported by Ubuntu. And the fact that they're getting more recent kernels in there in their LTS versions, like you said, will help with making sure that you have hardware support. Now, if you need hardware support and you need a more recent kernel, there are ways to install a more recent version of the Linux kernel into an existing Ubuntu distribution or installation. But if you want it supported by Ubuntu officially, then This is a good thing for sure.
Yes.
But if your requirements are even more cutting edge than what Ubuntu is supporting, there are ways to do that. But this is a good thing.
Yeah, especially if you're a new user and you don't know how to do that yet, you know. So
yep.
You know, we gear our podcast to new users and geeks and want to help us out like our minions. The more current the kernel is, the better it is for support for the hardware coming in. So it's always a good thing. It helps people moving to Linux to have even a smoother transition. So I'm all for that.
Yep.
So you know what I'm also all in for? Better gaming for everybody on Ubuntu saw a big performance boost while running big name titles on the distro this year. I'm so excited. As a bunch of developers finally agreed to raise the distro's virtual memory mapping limit. Might not sound like the most exciting thing, but if you play Hogwarts Legacy, Payday 2, Counter-Strike 2, DayZ, and the game I play with Star Citizen, they used to previously struggle or even open. So this is a great quality of life. Thank you, Canonical. Now just get your snaps fixed and we'll be good, but thank you for this. This is very, very, very helpful. Okay, so next.
Yeah. No, this is good for those people who do gaming on Linux. This is great. So this should affect the games that run on Steam. Will it affect the games that are native to Linux as well, even without having to run Steam?
Yeah, Star Citizen, the game that I actually have, that's the game I play, is actually not a Steam game.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, not being a gamer, I didn't know. Innocent question. Okay.
It's all right. It's all right. You know, we're gonna get you gaming yet, Larry. I got faith.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll take a look at Star Citizen. I have to say that I installed Alien Arena and started playing that a little bit again. I had installed it a while ago on a previous version or previous release of Ubuntu and stopped using it as I upgraded. But got it installed again. Maybe I'll look at Star Citizen see what that's all about. Okay. GNOME Feature Fest. So GNOME this past year, we got a pair of new Ubuntu releases, each release brimming with improvements, tweaks, and new features, courtesy of updates of the GNOME desktop. That's what the article says. They're making it nice and glossy and glitzy and glamorous. So woohoo! GNOME 46 came in the 24.04 release of Ubuntu. And according to the article, it lets us access Microsoft OneDrive files in Nautilus. Ooh. So if you use Microsoft OneDrive, step one, and you use Nautilus, you have revamped notifications, cleaner look, and improved performance. And things appear faster and use fewer resources, all good things. And then in 24.10, which is the interim release, they improved it even further in GNOME 47. So they improved Nautilus, the file manager, with sidebar customization, new network and remote mount user experience, and the ability to function as a file picker in other applications as well. So the GNOME improvements continue, as they say. Yeah.
So 2024 was Ubuntu's 20th anniversary. So they did some anniversary flourishes, I like to say. So, yes, 20 years old, can't drink yet. One more year, we'll be able to. It was first released back in October 2004. With the launch of Ubuntu 4.10 Warty Warhog. Yes. I remember that. I'm old.
I remember it. I never used it. I used it two versions later, 6.06.
I think mine was 6.10. So anyway, in honor of that anniversary, Ubuntu 24.10 offers a number of nostalgic nods to the past, such as the return of the original Ubuntu startup chime. You remember the one that you used to come up sound like chimes? I think that's it.
Yeah, so it says in the article here, not the one you're thinking of. Uh-huh. So maybe it's the original Wordy Warhog one. I remember the one from 6.06. That was cool with the drums and stuff.
Yeah.
So we'll see what it actually is. I'll have to listen to it.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was the one that's the drum one. Anyway,
yeah.
A Hey, and it come with the Wardy Brown accent color, and I have to say, not a fan. And a remastered version of the first Ubuntu wallpaper, which was, it was okay. It's brown. So
yeah.
It looks like, it looks brown. So
it looks brown. Yeah,
it looks brown. So let's, we'll just call it good. But, you know, it was very cool that they, did something for the 20th anniversary of the release. And, Hoyo's hoping as much as we harshed on him at the, beginning of the podcast. They are an important, distribution, and I want to see them go for another 20 years. So,
yeah, absolutely. And at the time, brown was a cutting edge because all Linux and Windows distributions were blue. Yeah. I mean, it was all blue.
It's brown.
And brown was, it controversial. Oh, wow. Can you actually use a different color?
It's brown. I mean, we've come a long way. Now I'm looking at it and I'm like, it's brown. I mean, yeah, it's okay. But, thank you.
Yeah, now we have eggplant, so.
Oh, okay, well, then that's all that matters.
Anyway, they've continue. Come a long way since then, too. moving on, and the title of their eighth point is Ubuntu plus NVIDIA plus Wayland. I think this is something we've already talked about, but okay, we'll talk about it again. This year, Canonical's engineers made the decision to make Ubuntu default to Wayland on NVIDIA GPUs. What they did previously was to fall back to Xorg or X11 on setups, owing to NVIDIA's longstanding Wayland dramas with the major upstream changes to the day-to-day experience of using Wayland with NVIDIA GPUs. They're moving ahead quite quickly to be able to do installations using Wayland and, of course, run the distribution using Wayland. So a lot of advances here in eventually eliminating X11. Still, in my opinion, a long way to go, but they're making fast advances, and it'll get even more rapid as Ubuntu and Fedora begin to use Wayland by default.
My favorite thing is in that little blurb they had, it says, "It's swell to see Wayland being used by more people, allowing them to benefit from technical security and cool kid club benefits."
So, all the cool kids are doing it, yeah.
All the cool kids. I'm really excited. I didn't know about how I felt about Wayland, but as I've read more about it and saw, you know, the progress and what it's capable of and the security and just, you know, the general, the way it's being built, I'm kind of excited for it. So let's, you know, I'm ready to go to an all Wayland. You know, Fedora, it's good enough for Fedora right now. So, hey, you know, that's saying something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Ubuntu released a desktop security center. Also, it was arriving later than planned, and it's not exactly equipped to do much yet. Ubuntu's new Security Center app arrived as a pre-install app with October's release of the 2410. One day, it will serve as a one-stop shop for all security management on Ubuntu and perhaps even offer some firewall controls.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah, so basically they're going to move, and I think it's a great idea. They're going to have one app for your security settings. You just go to the app, you change. You don't have to dig around to like certain other proprietary file systems that you have to dig around in 15 different parts to just do to turn stuff off and on security. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a great idea, and that's good for them.
Yeah, anytime we get easier to use security, easier to set up security, especially for new users, the better it is, because
the heck with the new users, the old users.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But especially with new users, they're not going to be concerned about security, especially since Linux is perceived as more secure anyway, which is good. But to be able to control it and ensure that you understand what's being set up and what, make sure you don't break anything, you know, with security, which is just as important as having the security. Let's not break it.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good thing.
Yeah. Good on them.
Yes. Okay. The last point in this article on Ubuntu.
Definitely a quality of life.
Yeah, definite quality of life on this one. The Debian packages, the Debs, install in App Center is the title of this. And so, you know, when Ubuntu swapped its GNOME software for its homegrown Flutter-based App Center, it was centered on snaps, showcasing snaps and trying to drive people towards snaps as opposed to Deb packages. So an ongoing pain point, says the article, to replacement was that it couldn't install Debian packages that users had downloaded themselves, like Google Chrome and Discord and Slack, which doesn't mean you couldn't install them. You just couldn't use the App Center to do it. And some people saw this as a regression. And so it looks like in 2024, they have taken some steps to make this problem go away. So now Ubuntu users can once again double-click on a Deb package of any app they download and install it using the graphical user interface instead of using the terminal. And it'll make it a lot easier. Again, especially for new users who just want to have it work. You know, I don't care about the technical details.
When I was testing, I actually run across this. And of course, all I did was use Synaptic Package Manager, you know.
Yep.
But new person wouldn't know. They want the app stores, but you know, that is definitely a regression. I mean, I don't know if it was an intentional regression or it's just an oversight, but that seems like a pretty bloody nose thing. You know, it's like you've hit a wall, so yeah, I should probably be able to install the Debs in a graphical user interface like we've had for the previous 19 years. Come on.
Yep.
It's hard to give them benefit of the doubt on that. I will, but it's like, come on, guys. You want people to use it. You want it to be easy for new users coming from other operating systems. So good on you for fixing it. Let's not do that again.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, you could always go to the command line and use dpkg or apt. I mean, that was still there. And I think GDebi was still provided by default by Canonical in Ubuntu.
Yeah.
If not, you could easily install it and, you know, associate the Deb package with the GDebi application. And then you've got a graphical installer. And as you said, you can use the Synaptic Package Manager, which is arguably a more technical graphical installer. It's certainly a little more complex to use, but it's nice to be able to use the same installation application, that App Center, to do everything regardless of where you get the packages from. This is a good thing as well. So
yeah.
10 good things that are outlined by this article, and we've covered them all.
Yeah. Okay, so we're getting toward the end of our podcast, so we've gone a little long, so we're just going to move this along a little bit quicker than usual. Linux gaming is doing pretty good. Lots of games on Steam. I now have heard that it's over 16,000 that work on the Steam Deck and Linux. So if you're a gamer, check check that out. And also check out Nabar Linux. Nabar is a Fedora-based distribution developed by Glorious Eggroll, who is more gaming-focused. It is gaming-focused, and it will help you get things in Steam running. They have fixes and tricks and stuff. So give Nabar a look. All right.
Okay, so our next one is Arch Linux had a great year with Valve's continued backing. Valve's Steam Deck uses Arch as its base OS. I can tell you wrote this. There's gaming in just about every one of these, Bill.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had kind of noticed that, yeah. Oh, so anyway, Arch had a good year, and yeah. So Steam Deck, Arch, good stuff.
Yeah. Basically, Arch is being, the Valve is funding the people that are behind Steam are funding developers to help with some of the back end thing because it benefits them. And that's nice to see that a company that's making money, not on open source, but with open source is actually supporting. So that's great to see. So way to go, Valve and Steam.
Yeah, and I had also heard that they're actually coming out with a hardware device as well.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, with Steam installed. So, yeah, that's been a long-standing wish of gamers, as I understand it. So, eventually, that's certainly not a 2024 thing, but coming up, I think, 2025, if not 2026.
We have the Steam Deck.
Yeah, so there's a Steam Deck, but there's also a new device that I heard about.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So you might want to take a look at it, some of the articles. And I, like I said, it was talked about on another podcast in 2024, but it's certainly not been released yet. So it's just future development, just since we're talking about gaming a lot.
I don't know what you mean, talk about gaming. That's silly.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
The Fedora project has been working on their Atomic desktops a lot this year. So I just wanted to name them off because they've added a few. Of course, everybody's heard of Servablue, which uses the GNOME desktop. Kinolite, I always like to say Kinolite Dynamite because it's a KDE, but it's called Kinolite. It's KDE desktop. And the two new ones are, it's the Sway Atomic, and it uses the Sway desktop, of course. And then you've got the Budgie Atomic that uses the Budgie desktop. So the last two ones are the new additions. Silverblue and Kinolite have been around. A lot of work has been made for these immutable or atomic, which means the base operating system is not touched, and then you have Flatpaks and Snaps or whatever running on top of it. So it's supposed to be where it's harder to break them and they're more secure. And so there's been a lot of talk in 2024 about these atomic distributions. And I just wanted everybody to know that if you're a Sway user, you might want to check out the Sway Atomic or the Budgie Atomic if you're interested. They are pretty good. I've run all but the Sway. So, yeah, give it a whirl. Hmm.
Yeah, that seems to be the way that these distributions are going, like we've observed in the past. And I'm glad to hear that Atomic isn't radioactive. So that's a good thing.
It's radioactive.
Moving on.
Yes.
So something else from 2024, KDE has had a great year in funding of their project. They had a one-time pop-up asking if you would like to donate. It worked, and they got more donations. Maybe they should do more of that. Way to support an open source project.
So they made 54,115 euros. So I converted the euros to US dollars. And it was $55,784.45. It's very important for that 45 cents.
Yes.
But anyway, they did really, really well in their funding. And just so that pops up and you can dismiss it and it won't bother you again. But it popped up and said, hey, you're using it. Would you like to give us some money? And apparently people didn't have a problem with it. So that's awesome. So
yeah, that's good.
So I know Gnomes also, the Gnome Foundation needs some help. So let's show Gnomes some love to also. So if you can throw them a little bit of donation, I'm sure they would appreciate it. The link is in the show notes. And what's, you know, because Gnome is behind a lot of distros. And so let's keep them healthy too.
Yeah. That's good. And any other desktop environment you use, feel free to contribute to that too.
Yes, by all means. And this is not really open source, but I wanted to throw an honorable mention because this has been in the news so much that it affects Linux and open source, is that Intel's had a really tough year with its 13th and 14th gen chips.
Yes, tell me about it.
Too much voltage, material issues, faulty microcode. So the guys just, you know, they had a tough year. So hoping 2025 will be a little better for them. So I know we could spend a lot more time talking about what happened in 2024. It was very exciting to see the progress. And I'm really excited to see what 2025 leads to. So I hope everybody has a great 2025, and I know we'll be talking soon.
Yeah, and best wishes for 2025 from me as well. And we're really looking forward to the new year in more way than one. And we are wrapped for 2024.
Yes, we
Thanks,
are.
Thanks, Bill, for all the hard work. And I know we've had a bit of interruption in our recording schedule for a number of different reasons. We each got busy for a period of time. You had a couple of bouts of some illness that you recovered from. And, you know, there's always those things that go on, but it seems like 2024 had a few more than we normally have. So,
preach it, brother. Preach it.
Yeah. Hopefully 2025 will be better to both of us, and we will be able to stick to our regular cadence of releases for our podcast and continue on. And having said that, our next episode will be listener feedback.
Until then, you can go to our website at goinglinux.com for articles and show notes, as well as links to download and subscribe.
We provide the website for computer users who just want to use Linux to get things done.
And if you'd like, you can participate directly with our friendly and helpful community members by joining the discussion in our Going Linux podcast community on Discord at community.goinglinux.com.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
73.